opinion of Kenyos on Pesach.
Okay, good morning, everybody. I'm really excited to be a part of this. And thank you to Rabbi Kleiman for all of your efforts, not just pre-Pesach, but all your efforts in Habratzas Torah throughout the year. So the question of eating kidneys on Pesach is something that is both fascinating. I think it's a very rich discussion. We're going to spend some time this morning trying to appreciate a little bit more about the background of this gzera, trying to understand it, what the parameters are. I know we don't have a lot of time. I was given a half hour, but it's not a hard stop, so we'll see. And just by way of introduction to this discussion and to Gzeiros D'Rabbanan in general, I'd like to begin with a pasuk in Parshas Bechukosai. That is really the final pasuk in Sefer Vayikra. And when you think about it, this pasuk really wraps up everything that was spoken about in the entire Sefer. So the Torah says, Eila ha-mitzvos asher tziva Hashem es Moshe b'nei Yisrael b'har Sinai. Sounds like a pretty concise pasuk. These are all the mitzvos that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu in turn gave it over to us. And this is everything that we need to do. Sounds pretty straightforward, sounds pretty simple, but the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos says that we learn from here that there's an additional level of meaning behind what we are instructed in this pasuk. It's not just that these are the mitzvos that Moshe Rabbeinu gave us, and we have a obligation to observe everything and to uphold everything that Moshe Rabbeinu taught. It's more than that. The Gemara says, Mikan, from here we learn, She'ein ha-navi rashoi lechadesh davar me'ata. Any subsequent navi post Moshe Rabbeinu has no right to add or to establish, to introduce or initiate anything that Moshe Rabbeinu did not already instruct us before. And that is a very important, a very instructive pasuk that the Torah tells us here in the end of Sefer Vayikra. It is repeated once again in Parshas Ve'eschanan, where the Torah there basically makes it clear to us, lo sosifu, you're not allowed to add on. The Torah tells us twice, Baal Tosef, you're not allowed to add. It says it b'lashon yachid. Lo sosifu means even b'lashon rabim, which means if a bezdin wants to come along and make an addition to the Torah, they're also not allowed to do that. If you want an interesting vart on Baal Tosef and what that's all about, people ask all the time, what's the problem? Why can't I add? I'm just doing more. I'm bringing myself closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there's an amazing mashal. I happen to love the Dubna Magid's Mishalim. I know they're not so popular b'zmanenu anymore, but I find them to be timeless. So he tells a story about somebody who went to his neighbor, and he was making some kind of simcha, and he wanted to borrow something. So he goes over to the neighbor and he says, can I borrow this and that? The neighbor says, sure. So he lends it to him. Next day, he comes back to him and he says, do you have it? Can you return it? He says, yeah, sure. So he gives it back to him. They have this kind of relationship back and forth. And one fine day, the neighbor lends him a fork. The next day he comes back and he gives him two forks. He says, what happened? Why'd you give me two forks? He says, the fork had a baby. Fork had a baby, so I gave you an extra. He says, okay, interesting. So he takes the two forks. The next day he borrows a knife. Comes back the day after and he gives him two knives. He says, why'd you give me two knives? He says, the knife had a baby, so I gave you the extra one. Fine. A few days later, he's really excited that his neighbor, everything he lends him, he gets two in response. So he says to the neighbor, would you like to borrow anything else in my house? He says, yes, actually, I need a diamond ring. I need a gold watch. He says, sure, I'd be happy to give it to you. Fine, gives him the gold watch, gives him the diamond ring. The next day he comes, he says, you have the watch? He says, I don't. He says, what do you mean? What happened? He says, it died. So what do you mean it died? A watch can't die. A ring can't die. He says, well, if a fork can have a baby, then a watch can die. What's the problem? So the Dubna Magid writes, as silly as it is to say Baal Tosef, that's as silly as it is to say Baal Tigra. They both don't make any sense. A fork can have a baby and a ring can't die both ways. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah and it's perfect. And Lo Tosifu means you're not allowed to add to it because it's perfect the way it is. And to add to it means that's just as arbitrary as saying that one of the mitzvahs died as to say that one of the mitzvahs had a child. So we know that we're not allowed to add onto the mitzvahs HaTorah. At the same time, we have this fierce demand that nobody's ever allowed to augment or add to one of the mitzvahs HaTorah. But on the other extreme, we also find the opposite consideration, where the Torah says in Parshas Acharei Mos, Ushmartem es mishmarti. And from there, the Gemara says in Maseches Yevamos, for those who are learning the daf, it's in the very beginning, the Masechta, Asu mishmeres lemishmarti. We do have an obligation to add. So this is a conflict. This is a problem. And it's something that is mentioned by the Rambam in Hilchos Mamrim. The Rambam is trying to figure out, how do we draw the balance? On the one hand, Lo Tosifu, on the one hand, we're told, Eila HaMitzvos, you're not allowed to add. Ein HaNavi Rashai LeChadesh. On the other hand, we say, Asu Mishmeres the Mishmarti, that Chazal are supposed to be augmenting, they are supposed to be adding to the Mitzvah HaTorah. So this is an issue that the Rambam raises, and the Rambam comes to the conclusion that it goes as follows. If the Chachamim are adding something to help as a safeguard, obviously they're allowed to do that. That's what it means. Asu Mishmeres le Mishmarti. If they're adding a din on Shabbos in order to make sure that we don't violate a malacha, of course, that's the job of the Chachamim, that's what they're supposed to do. However, says the Rambam, when doing so, they have to make it clear to the community that they're only doing this as a gzeira midirabanan. They're not allowed to say, this is a malacha. They're not allowed to say, this is an isra d'araisa. They have to make it clear, what is d'araisa, what is d'arabanan, and nobody can conflate the two. We have to make it entirely clear that this is only a din d'arabanan, which is why if you look in Shulchan Aruch, you'll find very often that we have different rules and regulations for dinim d'araisa, dinim d'arabanan. The most obvious is Safik Daraisa Lechumra, Safik Darabana Lekula. Why is that? Why would you say Safik Darabana Lekula? Darabanans aren't important? Of course they are. But the rules have to be different. It can't be the same. The Rambam says the way that we approach a Din Daraisa has to be very different than the way that we approach a Din Darabanan. And that goes for many, many different things. We know that B'Shas Adchak, we're willing to be Makel on certain Dinim Darabanan, not on Din Daraisa, certain times. But again, that's all part of this idea that you have to be careful, lo tosifu. You're not just allowed to arbitrarily add to a mitzvah or subtract. You have to do it all with a very clear conscience and being very careful, which really is something that raises a major issue when we come to Hanukkah and Purim. You ask yourself, what's the justification for Hanukkah and Purim? Those are institutions that were added on much later on in history, way after the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's not a gzeira or a mishmeres at all. That is not upholding anything. That is seemingly an independent mitzvah, to celebrate Hanukkah, to celebrate Purim, and that is a major problem. The Chasam Sofer deals with it, many other Achronim. How do you deal with the issue of Hanukkah and Purim? And the truth is, it's not that the Achronim are the first to deal with it. This is something that the Yerushalmi in Maseches Megillah raises as well. The Yerushalmi says, Hayu mitztarim al hadavar. Everybody had a very hard time figuring out what justification do we have to add Hanukkah and Purim into the Yamim Tovim of the year, to the point that the Yerushalmi writes, Lo zazim isham v'nosnim v'nosnim v'davar at sheheira kodesh baruch hu eneim. They worked so hard to figure out, what right do we have to add a Hanukkah and Purim? It's not so simple. The Chacham don't just have a right to add whatever they want and to arbitrarily decide that something is important or not. It has to be part of a system. It has to really fit. And it seems that Hanukkah and Purim are a little bit out of that system. Again, not a shir for now, but it's something just to consider as you think about Dinim Derabanan in general. So I brought here, just for your own reference, we're not going to go through it, but I think it's a very interesting discussion in the Tshuvas Kol Mevaser. Who is the Kol Mevaser? That was a great Talmud Chacham by the name of Rav Meshulam Roth, who was a survivor of the Holocaust and then ended up going, he was in Romania, he was in a bunch of different places, and he ended up going to Eretz Yisrael afterward. He became a Dayan as a part of the Rabbanut. And in 1963, they printed his tshuvas Kol Mevaser. A lot of the tshuvas are heart-wrenching. A lot of them are his discussions that he had with other fellow survivors and questions that came up. One that comes to mind, it's not relevant to this discussion, but just to understand who he was. One that comes to mind was, he said that there was a certain shul that, you know, many shuls have different things hanging in the front of the shul. So here they have Modim Derabanan, they have a Ner Tamid. Every shul has different things that they have in the front that mean something to the community. So he said that there was a community of Holocaust survivors that wanted to hang up a noose after the Nuremberg trials. They wanted to hang up a noose to remind themselves of the miracle that happened. They all remembered how much they were tortured. They remembered how terrible it was. And they wanted to hang this up so that all of them should always have in the front of their minds exactly what happened and how this miracle unfolded, how they were saved, and how so many, unfortunately, in their own families did not have that privilege of saving their own lives or being saved by others. And this was something that was very important to them. And they wanted to know, do we have a right to do it? And Shulchan Aruch says, you're not allowed to have an article which is a weapon inside of a shul, which is a major question in Eretz Yisrael. How do you deal with it? People have weapons all the time. But be it as it may, in Shulchan Aruch says, you're not allowed to bring a weapon into shul. Now here, this is a weapon, but it's not being used as a weapon. It's being used just as a symbol. So this is the shiloh that he poses. This is the shiloh he was dealing with. Is that something we'd be allowed to hang in the front of a shul? Just to give you a little picture of who we're dealing with and what kind of questions he was actually responding to. So this was the great Gadol Rav Meshulam Roth. And in his Tshuvas Kol Mevaser, again, you can read it on your own later, he gets into a major discussion that took place a number of years after the Shoah. In the 1950s, 1960s, there were those Rabbanim, those Gedolim in Eretz Yisrael, who felt that it would be entirely appropriate to make a Cheirem, that no one is ever allowed to go back to Germany. No Jew is ever allowed to go back to Germany. Similar to what we find by Mitzrayim. Torah itself says, look what happened in Mitzrayim. We don't want to ever be a part of that culture again. Don't even get close to it. Don't get near it. And that's what we're told. You're not allowed to return to Mitzrayim. And there were many who felt, as awful as the atrocities were in the days of Paro, it probably was quite similar, if not worse, in the days of Hitler. And maybe we should say, as a direct result, the same way the Torah says that we're not allowed to go to Mitzrayim, maybe we should say that we have a din derabbanan, no one's ever allowed to step onto the soil of Germany again, or Poland, or any of these countries, any of these communities that were involved in the atrocities of the Shoah, of the Holocaust, and maybe that's something that we should take very, very seriously. Very interesting perspective. Now today, it's like almost a given to us. We've heard of so many trips, the Heritage and Poland trips, and everybody goes, and obviously they're going for good reason. They're going because they want to have an understanding of what it is that happened for those who are so distant from that memory. But at the same time, it's not so pashut. It's not so simple. Maybe it's not right. And maybe every time we go to Germany or Poland, we are helping to support the enemy. It's hard to really understand whether they're still the enemy. It's just the children, a second generation, third generation. But this was the discussion immediately following the Shoah. They wanted to know, is that something that we would have a right to institute or not? And it's something that really impacted many of the survivors at the time. They felt very strongly. So he develops the theme, and again, you can read it on your own, but the reason why it's important is because he gets into a general discussion about Gzeiros Derabbanan, not particular to this, but something that's germane to all Gzeiros Derabbanan. How do we approach a new Gzeiros Derabbanan when the Chachamim of any generation feel that this is something that is important to them? Do we have a right to just decide this is what we're going to do? Or do we say you have to have a little bit more caution, and it's not so simple that you have a right to just make all these kinds of institutions? Again, something very worthwhile to read on your own. But if you look in the last few lines here where he writes, Be'emes anurom, we see, Ki gzeros derabbanan, gzeros v'tarkana sh'rabbeinu gersha ma'or ha'gola, shechai v'imei rav ha'igon. There were gzeros that were started by Rabbeinu Gershom. These are very famous gzeros. Let's say Rabbeinu Gershom made a cherem that you're not allowed to marry two wives. Why? He felt it was inappropriate to marry two wives. So that was 1,000 years ago. So did he have a right to make such a takana? It would change the shidduch crisis today that we have, right? A lot of things would change. Maybe we should not accept Rabbeinu Gershom, but again, who are we to say we're not going to accept Rabbeinu Gershom? But who is Rabbeinu Gershom to say that we should accept it? What right did he have to institute something that all of us are bound by? He's not Moshe Rabbeinu. So this is a major question. So he writes that you see that Rabbeinu Gershom's takana lonis pashet b'chal medinos. Not everybody universally accepted Rabbeinu Gershom as great and as holy as he was. Not everybody accepted that takana. The Sephardic communities did not accept it. Now it's become widespread, it's become mainstream, this is what everybody does. But at the time, this was not universally accepted. V'chein gzeiros kidneyos b'Pesach. The same goes when it comes to kidneyos on Pesach. Maybe it makes sense, maybe it doesn't. You like the gzeira, you don't like the gzeira, you like the takana, you follow it, you don't. But the bottom line is, at the time when the Chachamim came up with this idea of kidneyos on Pesach, it was not universally accepted. Va'od rabos ka'ela, v'keitzad nucha bizmanenu, he says, and how could it be in our generation? Bidar yosom kazeh, we are certainly not like Rabbeinu Gershom. We're not like any of the great gedolim who tried to make gzeiros on takanas that did not become widespread, did not become fully accepted by the community. How do we have a right? Litala tara la'atzmenu b'gzeira chadasha al kol Yisrael. You think you have a right to make a takana, to make a gzeira in 1960, 1950, and to decide that the entire Jewish people all over the world are going to be bound by that? Seems almost unreasonable. So again, if you look through the Makoros here that he quotes, he seems to quote Rishonim who say that you don't have a right to do it. So the question is, what is with the issue of kidneys on Pesach? Where does this come from? What right do we have to make this takana in the first place? And are we bound by it or not? So just to understand a little bit about it, when we talk about lechem, when we talk about bread, right, halachic bread, where are the cases in Chumash, either Daraisa or later on Midrabanan, where lechem is required? There are only 8 places where we find that lechem is a requirement. So in order to define what lechem is or is not, you have to first understand where is it going to be an issue? Where does it make a difference? So the 4 places min HaTorah are matzah. Obviously the Torah says lechem oni, you have to have lechem. Hafrashas challah, The only time you have to do afrasha is when you have actual bread. Pirchas hamazon is only if you ate something that's considered halachic bread, then you have to bench berachas hamazon. Otherwise, the bracha achrona is only midirabanan. And finally, the din of chadash, which again we're not so familiar with today because most of us are not makbid on chadash on yashan. But over here, the Torah says velechem v'kali v'karma lo tochelu. So those are the four places midiraisa that we have a requirement for lechem. Midirabanan, we have hamotzi. The Torah doesn't say you have to make a bracha rishona, but you only make a hamotzi on something that is lechem. Netilas yadayim for pas is only when you have something that is lechem. It's not going to be on a mizonos. Eruv chatzeros, again, we're not so familiar, but the Mishnah does say that we need to make an eruv chatzeros with pas. And finally, when we have a heter of pas palter, that is something that is only limited to pas. It's not something that we would have a kula for in other areas of halacha. The only reason we give it here, the Shach writes in Yeridei, it's because al alechem levado yichya adam. It's interesting. He's taking the pasuk and taking it in the opposite direction of what the pasuk meant. But the Shach writes, basically, that we have to make a kula when it comes to lechem because everybody needs bread. And if you're not going to have a heter of pas palter, then everyone's going to starve. What are they going to do? Again, today, it's not the same because we're not going to starve. We have plenty of other foods to eat. But back in Europe, this was a major concern. If you're not going to allow people to buy bread from the baker, what are they going to do? Now, we do not say that that heter applies to cakes and cookies and everything else. It's something that's limited to pas because pas is a staple of life and it's something that we all need. Now, what are the ingredients required in order to be considered lechem for netilas yadayim, for matzah, for everything else, for erev chatzeros, and for chadash, and for hamotzi, and everything else? The requirement is very clear. It's stated in Meseches Pesachim, Daf Lamed Hey. Let's learn the Gemara together, where the Gemara tells us the following. It's number Beis here. Writes the Gemara, Elu dvarim she'adam yotzei bahem yidei chavasa bepesach. These are the only items that can be used when preparing matzah for Pesach. And from there we learn, not only Pesach, this is for all the other halachas that we just mentioned as well. The only items that can be used are chitim, seorim, kusvin, shipon, shibola, shua. What are those? Wheat, barley, oats, rye, and spelt are the only chameshes minei dagan that would constitute lechem once they are baked as part of the mixture. The Gemara there says, what do you mean? It's only these five? Why don't we add an additional two to the list? What about orez v'dochen? What about rice? Now, just to understand, rice is kidneyous, right? So this is where the whole discussion begins. So the Gemara says, why are you only saying wheat, barley, oats, rice, spelt? What about rice? Says the Gemara, Amar Rab Shimon Lakish v'chein tanad v'er b'shmal, Amar Krolo, sochal alav chametz, shivas yamun tochal alav matzos. The only thing that you're allowed to use in order to prepare the matzah is something that had the ability that were it to ferment, were it to leaven, we would then consider it to be bali dechimutz. It would become chametz. But he says, you can take orez v'dochen, you can take rice, and you can leave it for as long as you'd like, you can take hot water and put it inside, and nothing's going to happen. It's never going to become chametz. And since it can never become chametz, it cannot be considered to be matzah. What do we learn from there? We learn from there that it cannot be considered halachic bread if it's made from rice. Clear. That's what the Gemara says very clearly. Now, the Gemara brings one opinion that disagrees, Rabbi Yochanan Menuri. And the Gemara says, no, Rabbi Yochanan Menuri feels that it is, which is, by the way, the Ramban asks, how can it be that they have a dispute here whether it's bali dechimutz? Look at it. Do it. What? It's a metzias. Look at it. Put the rice into a bowl of water, mix it up, and see. Leave it for a day or two and see what happens. What's the machlokas here? Can't have a machlokas in Metzius. Why don't they do an experiment? The Ramban quotes the Yerushalmi in Maseches Challah that they did do an experiment. The machlokas here is not that they were in the clouds and they didn't know how to do the experiment. It's not so hard. Take water, put in the ingredients, and see what happens. They did do it. The machlokas is the result that came about. Is that called bali dechimutz? There were certain cracks in the loaf of bread, and they weren't sure. Is that an indicator that this did become chametz, or this is really just the incipient stages, and it's never going to progress to become further into a chametz product? So they're not just having a machlokas and metzias. The question is, how do you interpret the metzias? But says the Ramban, Chalila, to say that they had a machlokas because they just didn't bother to do the experiment. Of course they did the experiment. What's the shaila? So that's what the Ramban quotes, which is a very important discussion as well. But be it as it may, the Gemara comes to the conclusion that if you have something that is made out of a rice product, it cannot be chametz, which means it cannot be lechem, which means that you cannot use it for matzah on Pesach. The Gemara later on in Maseches Pesachim, this is in Perek Kol Shah, the Gemara later on in the last Perek in Maseches Pesachim, Daf Kuf Yud Daled, says, Les dechash lahadar Rabbi Yochanan Menuri. Nobody accepts the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. He's the descending opinion here. It was not even a chumrah that anyone adopted. Nothing. He is totally rejected. We hold unequivocally that orez v'dochen, that rice would not be considered chametz at all, and it cannot be used for the matzah. Writes the Rambam. Let's learn the Rambam together, number Gimel. The Rambam says, based on this Gemara, ein iser mishim chametz bePesach el chameshes minei dagam bevad. The only thing that can be chametz on Pesach is something that was made from the chameshes minei dagam, and those are outlined in the Gemara. As we said, chita saora, shibol l'shul v'shipon. Okay. Aval writes the Rambam very clearly, hakidnius, kigon, orez v'dochen, if I have rice, upulim v'adashim, if I have beans, and all kinds of things that we all know to be kidnius today, says the Rambam, ein b'em mishim chametz, no problem of chametz at all, and therefore he says, afilu lash kemach orez, if I have rice flour, and I put it into a dough, and I do it beroschin, I do it with hot water, which usually makes the chima, the fermentation, happen quicker. Says the Rambam, even if I do all the things that normally would make something become chametz even more quickly, so I put rice flour in with boiling hot water, v'chiseo bibigadim, and I cover it over so that it's more susceptible to become chametz. Still, says the Rambam, you can leave it here from today till tomorrow. You can do everything in the world, and it will never become chametz. Hareza muter ba'achila she'ein zachim atzel asirchon. Writes the Rambam, you can eat that on Pesach, because why would it be a concern? The Gemara just told us it could never be baladei chametz. So that's the end of the story. That's what the Rambam says. So where does this whole idea of kidneys come from? At least until the days of the Rambam, it seems that this was a non-starter, nothing to discuss. And the Rambam seems to be correct, because after all, the Gemara clearly states exactly what the Rambam said. So where does this idea come from, and when did it change? There are two reasons why, along the way, the Rishonim came up with this idea of kidneys. Number one, they said the reason why is because sometimes, today, it's very unlikely, because today we have factories, and if a factory that produces wheat is going to mistakenly have some rice, or the other way around, the company is going to be sued, because there are people who have allergies to one or the other, and if you're going to have things that are mixed from one product to the other, that could be a major, major problem. I remember a number of years ago, Ramosha has a very interesting tshuva about blood spots and eggs. So it's a major question in Yerodea, what do you do when you have a blood spot in an egg? We all know that we dispose of it. Why do we dispose of it? Because that's an indication that really this is something that would have fertilized to become into a chicken, and therefore we're not supposed to eat it. So anyway, so we get rid of it, right? So that's the minute. The truth is today, we know that our eggs are not fertilized. And when you have a blood spot in an egg, me'ikar adin, you're not really mechuyev to dispose of it. You don't really have to throw it out. So why do I mention that? I mention it because seem to remember we were in Australia. I was single at the time. We had a group of boys who went in the summer to teach in a school there, and we had an issue. We had a lot of eggs that had blood spots. That was one thing, and then we had another issue about Chalav Yisrael milk. We could not find Chalav Yisrael milk, and it was a whole question. So here in the United States, many people are makel based on Rav Moshe's tshuva. Rav Moshe says, Bal Nefesh Yachmir. Rav Moshe says, Ben Torah should be Machmir. Okay. So if you have the ability to be machmir, great. If you live out in Alabama and they don't have Chalav Yisrael milk, okay, so Rav Moshe says you can be mekel. Why can you be mekel? What do you mean? We have a din chalav akum. How are you allowed to eat non-kosher milk? It's not non-kosher. How do you eat kosher milk that was milked by a non-Jew? Sorry, you're not allowed to drink non-kosher milk ever. So why are you allowed to have chalav stam, chalav akum? Why is that mutter? So Rav Moshe gives an argument. He says, since we have USDA regulations, and if someone's ever going to catch the dairy farm that they were really milking a different kind of animal and they mixed it up with this animal and they put that in the bottle without telling the customers, they'll get sued. So because we have federal regulations, so therefore Rav Moshe says we don't really have to be concerned. That's basically that there's pikuach, and basically means that there's a hashgacha on it. The government gives the hashgacha. That's basically what the answer is. So there we were in Australia, and we had some issue with the milk. So I had to call up Rabbi Gutnick, who's the chief rabbi of Australia, and I said to him, I know that in America we have USDA regulations, and if anybody ever breaks the law, they're going to be sued, and the company will be shut down, and that's where Rav Moshe's heter comes to be. But what do we do in Australia? I don't know how your government works. Are people actually afraid of the government? He says, are you kidding me? If there wouldn't be a problem in America, a million times more, there wouldn't be a problem ever in Australia either. So we have that heter. But again, the point is that bizmanenu, people are very wary of this issue. We have a better understanding of allergies. We know that companies can be sued. And therefore, things, very seldom do they ever get mixed up from one product to the other. By the way, if you ever go into a kashrus agency and you ask them what happens in all these factories where they produce all kinds of different food items, the factory is basically the same factory. One day they're doing split peas, and the next day they're doing something else. It's not a factory that's only for peas. It does a run every single day for different products. So you can have a factory. I remember I was with my father in the OU one day. There was a whole shaila because they had done a run of grape juice one day. It was a non-kosher factory. The next day they were doing a run of orange juice, which is typical. The problem is, it's stam yenam, because yesterday they had grape juice, and that was not under hashgacha. And do you have to be concerned that there's going to be non-kosher grape juice or non-kosher wine that maybe is going to be somehow impacted into this orange juice run that we're doing today? So again, it's very unusual that we're not going to have a cleaning service that comes out and gets everything out from the day before. It's unusual. But again, in the times that this whole discussion came to be, it made a lot of sense. They have somebody who's manufacturing rice, somebody else manufacturing wheat. It's not so unlikely that maybe some of the kernels of wheat are going to end up in the kernels of rice and vice versa. And therefore, that was reason number one why they came up with this idea. Number two, the reason why is because we know that many people use rice flour the same way we use wheat flour. And somebody's going to make a mistake. They're going to walk by and they're going to see that you're using flour. They're not going to realize that it's from a bag that has a different color, that has a different demarcation on it. And therefore, they're going to get confused. They're going to think that you're allowed to use wheat flour on Pesach. They're not going to realize that this is very different, that this can never be Bala de Chimutz. And therefore, that's where this came about. The Beis Yosef discusses this, and I find this Beis Yosef to be amazingly fascinating. Because we take it for granted that kidneys is kidneys. We stay away from kidneys. Maybe there are kulas here or there, but we stay away from kidneys as Ashkenazim. But the Beis Yosef here gives us the background. Let's read the Lashon of the Beis Yosef. If I didn't see it myself, none of us would ever say such a thing. But look what he says. Yesh osrim lechol orez v'chol mine kidneys. Right, so Beis Yosef, there are some people. Beis Yosef is in the 1500s. So he says, there are some people who have this idea that they don't eat kidneys on Pesach. And he says, chumar yisayri yizu. This is unreasonable. Where does this chumar come from? Gam Rabbeinu Yeruchim Kasav, Rabbeinu Yeruchim, one of the Rishonim, writes, Osim shenagu shelo lechol orez v'mine kidneys mevushal b'pesach. Those who stay away from kidneys on Pesach. Minik shtusu, he says, it's nonsensical. Why would you tell me that you're not allowed to have kidneys on Pesach? Did you ever read the Gemara? Did you read the Rambam? Where is this coming from? He says he can't understand it. He says, ulasiim heim osim lahachmer al atzmam. Maybe somebody wants to be machmer for themselves. He says, lo yadati lama. I can't fathom why somebody would do this. Then he says, after all, the Gemara tells us that it can't be bali de chimutz. He has an amazing line here where he says, lo toy inshi bazed de tinoka shavis rabin yodin osam. Amazing. Beis Yosef assumes that every school child knows the Gemara Pesachim Daf Lamed Hey. Who doesn't know the Gemara Pesachim Lamed Hey? I mean, I don't understand. Who's ever going to make a mistake? You're having a discussion with someone, you tell them I'm using rice flour. Of course, everyone's immediate reaction, every kid in elementary school knows that if somebody tells you they're using rice flour, of course, that means that it can never become chametz, because that's what the Gemara says in Pesachim Lamed Hey. I mean, who would ever confuse that? Says the Beis Yosef, I don't understand where this whole chumar comes from. Look at the last line of the Beis Yosef where he says, again, you can read the whole thing on your own. In the end, he writes, Leis dechash ledvarim halalu zulasi Ashkenazim. These crazy Ashkenazim, he says, I don't know, they came up with this idea, and they're the only ones who care about it. But everybody else thinks it's insane. Why? Because everybody in our community knows that there's no such thing as chametz that comes from these ingredients. Yeah?
So many times you find that people, let's say in Rov, but they're machshev to a shita, trying to do both shitas. Mm-hmm. And you have Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. So why doesn't anybody say, okay, they tested it, they didn't, but Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri had a reason. Why don't they say, Pesach, we're so machmir, we check every little thing. It's the shirim are so tiny, why isn't somebody saying
So your question is a very good question. In fact, in Shulchan Aruch, the mahalach of Chachmei Ashkenaz in general in Shulchan Aruch, as you find it many times, is that we try to be machmir for both shitas if we can. Right, Shechiyanu on Rosh Hashanah, all these different things. You find so many examples where the Rama quotes from Chachmei Ashkenaz that we do whatever we can to satisfy both opinions. But when the Gemara itself says that we should disregard an opinion, then we're not machmir for it. So the Gemara here, Beferish, on the last parak Pesachim says, although we have a machlokas on Pesachim Lamed Hey, whether or not this could be Bala Dechimus, the Gemara says, the Lashon of the Gemara is Leis Dechash Lahad Rabbi Yochanan Manuri. We shouldn't even be choshes. So if the Gemara knocks it out, so that means it's off the table. There's nothing to discuss. And therefore, that's why he has a very hard time understanding why would somebody be machmer for this if the Gemara itself says not to. Now the Rama says, Anu b'nei Ashkenaz nagin l'achmer. Yeah, those Ashkenazim that the Beis Yosef is talking about, that's my community, says the Rama. They lived at the same time. Beis Yosef lived in Spat, the Rama lived in Krakow. And the Rama says that we, the Ashkenazim in Krakow, have the minhag that we are machmir. So, obviously, this has been adopted by Ashkenazim all over the world. And it went to an extreme. It's not just that Ashkenazim accepted the Chumrah. The Trumas HaDeshan even goes so far as to ask the following Shaila. Trumas HaDeshan, who again is one of the fathers of Ashkenazic Jewry, and many of the Piskei Halacha and the Rama come from the school of thought of the Trumas HaDeshan. So Trumas HaDeshan has a Shaila. Am I even allowed to allow rice to be in my house on Pesach? Meaning we have an Isser Ba'yir Al Ba'yim Matzeh. So we know you're not allowed to have chametz in your house on Pesach. Right? So Trumas HaDeshan, now that we're machmer for kidneys, maybe I shouldn't even be allowed to have rice or kidneys in my house on Pesach. So Trumas HaDeshan seems to be taking this very seriously. To the point that he says, maybe it should be included, obviously not the same as Ba'yir Al Ba'yim Matzeh, you won't violate an Isser Da'araisa, but maybe we should treat it the same. And we should go so far as to say that you have to dispose of all kidneys in your house. Not just that you can't eat it, but you're not even allowed to have it. And the answer that he gives is the following. Inhu achli va'anan lo mashinan. Our brothers, our lovely brothers, the Svardim, are going to go and eat the kidneys on Pesach. And you're going to tell me that we have to go to the opposite extreme, not just that we shouldn't eat it, but we're not even allowed to have it in our homes? That sounds unreasonable. Says the Trumas HaDeshan, that's too far. That doesn't make sense. Our brothers, the Svardim, are going to be eating this on Pesach. And we're going to go ahead and tell them, not only do we not agree that you can't eat it, but you're not even allowed to have it in your house. That's too extreme.
If you're worried about the first reason the Beis Yosef goes down.
So you should.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he builds up the question to say. Meaning we should have said that. Then he says he thinks that that's going too far, even though Alpi Svara makes a lot of sense. But the Trumas HaDeshan says to say that would just rip the Jewish people apart. It wouldn't make sense. You want to be machmer to eat this, you want to be machmer not to eat it. Okay, it's fine. But to say that if you walk into my house with your bag of rice, right? Let's say a Sephardi comes to eat in my house on Pesach, which of course he's allowed to do. Sephardi comes to my house on Pesach, he walks in with his own bag of rice, he says, oh, I forgot, I'm going to bring it home later. What, I have to tell him you got to leave it outside? That's going a little too far. And that, he says, would be an unreasonable chumrah. And based on that, he says, that we should take it a step further, and we should say that the only prohibition that they made when it came to kidneys was legabe iser achila bilvad. And he says there is no Isser Hanah when it comes to kidneys. And therefore he writes, if you have some kind of situation where the only oil that you have to light the flames, to be able to have light in your house on Yantif, is oil that's shemen kidneys, you're allowed to use it. Again, you shouldn't cook with that oil, because that's kidneys, that's the Isser Achila that we instituted. But he says to go so far as to say that you're not allowed to have Hanah from it, to go so far as to say that you're not allowed to even have it in your house, says the Trumas HaDeshan, that would be way too far. And the Rama...
That include medicine?
Does what include medicine?
Kidneys.
So 1 second, we're going to get to medicine in a second. So the Rama in Siman Taf Nun Gimel, hold on to your question, the Rama in Taf Nun Gimel writes that Minig Ashkenaz, as we mentioned, is to be machmer for kidneys. However, he says, Im nafa letoch hakdeira, if kidneys falls into a... if some kidneys ingredients falls into a pot, you don't have to dispose of it. You're allowed to have it around the house on Pesach. Why? Because we don't treat it like chametz. You can't say that it's the same as chametz. After all, the Trumas HaDeshan writes, if half of the Jewish people who are Svardim are going to be eating this, we can't treat it as chamer. We can't say that this is going to be the opposite extreme. My father always tells over the story every year that there was a woman who wanted to make her children a treat. Again, 40 years ago when he got to Shai, there was a big treat on Chol HaMoed for a mother to make corn on the cob. I don't know. I don't think our kids would be so excited today. But that's what used to be a big treat. So my father always tells the story how this woman innocuously went into the kitchen, went out to the supermarket, bought some corn on the cob, put it up. Her husband came home from work, and he's going crazy. Oh, it's treif in the kitchen. How can it be? It's Pesach. It's kidneys. It's corn. We don't eat corn. And she was just trying to make everyone happy, and she forgot all about it. She realized that she made a mistake. So he says, you got to throw out the whole kitchen. You got to throw out the oven, throw out the pots. So while it's true that you shouldn't eat the corn on the cob because that is kidneys, we do not hold that there's an Isser Oblius of kidneys, right? We do not hold that the pot becomes treif. So we hold you should wait a little bit. Kasha the pot, not a big deal, but it doesn't mean that that doesn't mean that it's like chametz bePesach. We don't go that far. The Rama talks about what do you do when you have something that was cooked, kidneys that was cooked mistakenly in a pot on Pesach. Rabbi Vadi has a tshuva. What happens if you have an Ashkenazi who marries a Sfardia? And part of the understanding is that Yantif, he's going to go to his in-laws. So what does he do? Do they have to recreate a whole menu for him just because he's an Ashkenazi who doesn't eat kidneys? So obviously he himself is not allowed to eat the kidneys. His family minhag is that they don't eat kidneys. But does that mean he's not allowed to eat anything that was cooked in the same pots? So his in-laws have to have two sets of Pesach dishes. One set of Pesach dishes that is for when he's not in the house. And the other set of Pesach dishes, I mean, I assume he'll never be invited back again. So this is a very important shayla that Rabbi Avadia talks about. It happens to be, it comes up all the time. We have communities where Sephardim marry Ashkenazim all the time, vice versa. And this is certainly a very serious question. But the Chayyadim writes that because kidneys is only a Gzera Dirabanan that came so much later on in history, and even at the time when it was instituted, it was not fully adopted, it was not accepted by everyone in the Jewish community at the time, the Chayyadim writes, therefore, if you have a Shasat Chak, you're allowed to be Mekel on kidneys. So what does a Shasat Chak mean? Mishnah Brura says, Shasat Chak, I'll read you what he says, Pashut, Shehu Adin L'chola Af She'em Bo Sakana. Shasat Chak doesn't mean that you have to be a life-threatening illness. Shasat Chak doesn't even mean that you have to be somebody who's going to be sick in bed over this. Shasat Chak means you have somebody who's just uncomfortable on Yom Tov. So, again, we have to be a little bit mature. Of course, all of us would be much more comfortable if we were able to eat kidneys. Okay, get over yourselves. And for a week of the year, we can handle no kidneys. But for example, somebody called me last week that they have a 2.5-year-old who's allergic to many, many different things. And one of the only items that they actually, ironically, are able to have is peanuts, which is strange. Usually peanut allergies are very strong and other allergies are weaker. But the way it turns out with their child is they can't have egg whites, they can't have this, they can't have a lot of different things. But peanuts they're able to have. So they said they're going on a flight on Pesach, they're going to visit the other side of the family on the other side of the country. And they don't know what are they going to give the kid to eat on the plane. They can't make certain foods on the plane for them. So can they give them a snack on the plane that is a kidney snack? I said, of course. First of all, ketanim in general were much more makel for young children. But even if not, the Mishnah Brura here writes that if it's some kind of shasat chak, the Chayyadim says if it's a shasat chak, even if it's not a major shasat chak gadol, doesn't mean that the kid is going to get sick. It doesn't mean the kid is going to be in some kind of danger. It means the kid's going to be uncomfortable. He's flying on a plane. He has nothing to eat. He's going to be screaming the whole time. Actually, that would be a chodesh ema sakana based on the parameters of the... It's true. The Ramah does say that a child on Shabbos who's going to be screaming because they're not going to get what they want is considered to be a chodesh ema sakana, and we would be able to be makel on certain things. But again, we have many, many kulas when it comes to kidneys because of the fact that it's only a din d'rabbanan that came on later on in history, and we cannot consider it exactly like chametz b'pesach. We have to have a notch lower as a result of the fact that we need to show that it is not the same. And based on that, the Ramah says, if kidneys falls into a pot, we would say it's batel b'rov. Why do you say batel b'rov? Usually if chametz b'pesach, you say chametz is b'mashahu. Even if a drop of chametz falls into something, we say that it disqualifies everything. But here, the Ramah says, we have to be more makel because, after all, it is only kidneys. Let me just close with one final thing. I see I'm already 10 minutes over time. Rav Moshe has a very important discussion trying to figure out what is considered part of the classification of kidneys and what is not. So if we're just going to talk about rice, that's pretty easy. We know that rice is the whole discussion that they had. My father jokes every year when he talks about kidneys, he says that in Europe they used to make fun of the Chayyadim, that he called the Sefer Chayyadim, they used to call him Kitzer Adam. That he's trying to kill people. Why? I mean, Khalid, that's a joke. But why? Because the Chayyadim said that potatoes are considered kidneys on Pesach. Can you imagine? What would we do on Pesach without potatoes? Now, the Chayyadim is saving us all from heart attacks from eating so many potatoes. But the truth is that there was a major discussion. Why would you say that potatoes are not the same as every other type of kidneys? And the Chayyadim comes to that conclusion, that potatoes should be kidneys. Now, we don't accept that. That's not the mainstream. All of us have potatoes in our home, even if we're machmer or kidneys. We don't have rice, but we do have potatoes and other things. And the question nowadays is, what do you do about quinoa? So quinoa is a major discussion. Quinoa is something that was not around in the days of Rav Moshe. But Rav Moshe did have other items that came about much later than the Achronim before him who discussed other items. So Rav Moshe is talking about peanuts, Rav Moshe is talking about canola oil, different kinds of things that were not around in the days of the Chayyadim and those who were discussing the earlier issues of kidneys. And Rav Moshe has a major chiddush where he says, again, this is not totally accepted by everyone, but it's a very interesting chiddush. The chiddush is that the whole gzeirah of kidneys in the first place is such a whopper of a chiddush, it's not so simple how we came to it. In fact, the Gemara seems to indicate very clearly that kidneys is off the table, there's nothing to discuss. Like we said, Rav Yochanan ben Nuri is rejected. So why do we even have a discussion at all? So Rav Moshe says, okay, but the Ramah already tells us that Ashkenaz already has adopted upon themselves that we accept the Chumrah of kidneys, and that's what all the Chachmei Ashkenaz have done for generations. So we don't have a right to get rid of it. However, says Rav Moshe, havu to lo losef ala. Now you're going to add on to the category of kidneys, which in the first place is problematic? That doesn't make sense. So Rav Moshe comes to the conclusion that anything that was not around at the time of the gzeira of kidneys, anything they were not aware of, is not included in this general category of kidneys and would be mutter on Pesach. Which is why my father's of the opinion that quinoa on Pesach is permissible. Why? It should be exactly the same as kidneys. It has all the same characteristics. It's exactly the same as everything else that we say is off limits on Pesach. But since quinoa is something that is fairly new and was certainly not around, it wasn't even around in the days of Rav Moshe. It was not around 100 years ago or 200 years ago. So therefore, he says that this follows the klal of Rav Moshe, that havul dulo lo sefalot, that we don't add on to the gzeir of kidneys. It's enough that we have the chumrah that it is, and we don't have to add on to that category. Many contemporary poskim disagree, and they feel no. Rav Moshe's whole premise is not so clear that it's correct. After all, look in the Chai Adam. Chai Adam says we should add potatoes. What do you mean? How are you adding potatoes? Potatoes was not around in the days of the Beis Yosef in the 1500s, but it was around in the 1700s, 1800s, and yet it was a discussion. There were many who said we have to be machmir. So there were those who argued with Rav Moshe's whole chiddush and said, no, Rav Moshe shouldn't be accepted when he says that kidneys is cut off at where it is and nothing should be added. After all, you see, in every generation, they did discuss over and over again the new items that came to light, and this was an ongoing discussion that should continue to be an ongoing discussion. Again, a very interesting issue, a very important issue. Kidneys, again, if you go to Eretz Yisrael nowadays, there are many in the Ashkenazi community who are trying to get rid of the whole din of kidneys. That is inappropriate. It's clear that the Ramah and the Chumash HaDeshen and all the Chachmei Ashkenaz have told us that Ashkenazic Jewry should follow this chumrah of kidneys, even though if you look in the sources in the Gemara itself, it seems to be problematic. But it's something that we have adopted for other reasons. As we mentioned, there are two reasons that are given in the Beis Yosef. And it would be inappropriate to just make light of it and get rid of it. But to limit it, so to speak, and to say that maybe we should only consider it relevant to the things that were around 200 years ago, maybe that's where Moshe's Chiddush is, and maybe that's a room to be made a little bit. Again, if you have some kind of tzorech, medication, as you said, or some kind of shasat chak, of course you can be mekel, but in general, for healthy people who don't really have some kind of extenuating circumstance, and they are part of the Ashkenazi community, they certainly should be machmer for kidneys, as we saw. Wishing everyone a chag kosher v'sameach. Real pleasure to learn with everybody, and a wonderful day.